Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's Friday. That means we turn it over to the Duff McKagan Joke of the Week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan here. The guy went to the doctor. The man went to the doctor, and the doctor said that you're not going to live. You're going to live until just tomorrow, not tonight. So the man calls his wife, says, you got to get off work now. And she did. He told her the news, and they go to an amazing dinner. And then they go to the theater, romantic, you know, the last night. And then they get home, they make passionate love. They finally fall asleep. He wakes up at 4 in the morning, and he's like, oh, come on, let's make love one last time. She goes, well, it's okay for you. You don't have to get up in the morning. Okay, thank you very much. Goodbye.
All right, I like that one. It's not a Duff classic, but it's better than some. We love Duff either way. For delivering the goods every single Friday for the last 3.5 years. Just like the Winnipeggers dish it up on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern and on Facebook and YouTube. And this week's episode is probably my favorite. It's a classic. It's the Great Imitation Contest. And boy, do we do some bad ones. We choose them for each other. So I'll tell you some of the people and characters that get impersonated. But you got to watch the Winnipeggers to find out which of the three of us does them. Me, Ribo, and Dave Spivak attempt Kermit the Frog, Edith Bunker, Mr. Rogers, John Lennon, Screech from Saved by the Bell, Woody Allen, Elmo, Darth Vader, and Barbara Streisand. We attempt a bunch of others too, fail miserably. You'll definitely laugh, and that's probably the best thing about the show. Definitely laugh at us and not with us, or either way. Come get your laugh on with the Winnipeggers. New episodes every Thursday at 9 p.m. on my Facebook page and my YouTube channel, and we will be going live, first time ever, live on November 5th on YouTube Live and Facebook Live, and you will see the debut of the Idiot Olympics. So stay tuned for that. But today, Santana and Ortiz from the Inner Circle return to Talk is Jericho. They came on over the summer to talk about the big stadium stampede, but this time they're talking about their journey to AEW, including why they chose AEW over WWE. They're also talking about their time on the indies, their shoot jobs working security at Borders Books and TJ Maxx, their run as LAX at Impact, what they learned from Conan, and how they started tag teaming in the first place. Lots of great stories from Santana and Ortiz. All right, so last week, as we're recording this, the big match that everyone was talking about was the street fight parking lot brawl with Santana Ortiz and the Best Friends. And it's funny because we've been working together for a while with the Inner Circle. We did the big podcast with all five of us, but I've been wanting to do a podcast with just you guys. And after stealing the show last week, it's perfect timing. Like, how did you guys feel about that match and the reception it got?
It was a pretty exciting and eventful week, to say the least. I mean, it was, for me personally, it was one of those things where it happened, I saw the reaction, and I put my phone down and just spent it with the family.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was such a high, mm-hmm, that I was like, I don't want anything else to you know, yeah. So I put my phone down, I spent it with the family, and it was good.
How about you, Ortiz?
Yeah, it was it was definitely an awesome feeling. It was what it needed it to be. We kind of went into the match saying, like, we need this to be a really good blow-off. Because I think the build-up to it was decent to good. But I think we needed the exclamation point at the end, and I'm happy we delivered. And thanks to Jerry Lynn and kind of funneling all our ideas and kind of setting it up for it to be the best possible match. And I think I'm really happy with it. And I watched it. I got to sit down and watch it with my girlfriend and her parents, and they just looked at me like I was a maniac, and it was cool.
It was one of those things, too, because you filmed it after the show was done.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to see it because we all split because I didn't know how late you'd be going. I don't know if it was going to be another, you know, stadium stampede of an eight-hour shoot. But
we were really hoping not.
But seeing it, like I had Kevin Sullivan send it to me, just watching it, I was like, holy shit, this is great. But you guys did that all in one go, right?
Yeah,
one take.
It was one take, yeah.
It wasn't like it was stop, start, stop, start.
Yeah, I at one point I remember telling one of the production guys, I was like, please, no one yell cut in this match. It's going to be bad. Like we were so hyped up and so at that point where if we would have had to cut anything or it would have killed the whole match, I feel like. So thankfully
it kills your vibe of 100%. You kind of get into the bubble of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why it's like it would be hard to be an actor, but actors aren't also doing these their own stunts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Like you got to be mentally into it as much as you are physically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when did you put that all together?
That day. I mean, we talked about things over the week, and we figured out some things we wanted to do, but it was pretty much that day. We just got with each other. We went over it all day, and yeah, and that was the end result. But
some really creative stuff.
Yeah, we were we put together like a group chat with all of us, and I just wanted, my main thing was making sure that all four of our visions were being put out there and everyone had their say in whatever. So we just got in a group text and started throwing little ideas here and there, and what weapons we want to use, what props we want to get together, you know, just the we were sharing other parking lot matches and you know what I mean, just trying to get an idea for the
Have
madness
there been, like, what other parking lot matches were there?
We were watching Eddie and Cena was one.
Yeah.
Then we watched and Jeff at TNA.
Jeff Jarrett. Yeah, they just.
So that was more of a
potatoed
fight.
Potatoed each other.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah. But
and Devon and it was I don't think it was a match. It was just like a segment. It was
all the
Devon
Dudleys.
And Bubba.
Yeah.
I guess they were feuding an Impact, and Devon just started just wailing on Bubba, and he had like this one moment where Bubba's just like, come on, Devon, all right, I'm sorry. And he's just like squandering in the corner, and he's like, I'm sorry. But it was great. We wanted to actually do something like that in the match, but it just didn't end up going. But
I did that with Seth Rollins once when he was using the pedigree as a finish on top of a car. And like, you know, it's scary because, you know, we take bumps to the ring and all that stuff, but like mm-hmm. it's a freaking car. And I remember I took the old like kind of pussy one on both of my knees.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
Like, oh, I wish I could do that again.
Uh-huh.
But so what was the worst part of it for you guys? So like you said, you took some crazy bumps.
Getting smashed in between the engine and the hood. That sucked.
You jumped off the hood onto the.
I was sandwiched in between the engine and the hood of the engine. And Chuck did like a swanton type deal onto it. But then Trent just did this senton, and it just, all the wind came out of me. My head hit the engine block. It sucked.
What the dude? In movies, people die that way.
Yeah.
You know, like the guy's car breaks down. He goes in to fix it, and the killer comes and slams the hood down and cuts him in half. It's not supposed to be that way.
No. It really sucked. Hindsight being 2020. I'm glad we did it because it added to the match. But I probably wouldn't do that again. That sucked. Yeah.
How about you?
For me, was right in the beginning when I had the bright idea of going head first into a side window, side mirror of a car.
And it didn't move.
And, you know, yeah. Usually those mirrors come right off. Like you kick,
that's right.
You kick that shit and it's coming off. Right. And I was like, all right, I'll just take it head first. And I took it head first and it didn't budge and it cracked me wide open. So,
you know, yeah, you could drive by, you know, some other car in the grocery store parking lot and nick it, and that thing's
falling. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This one not was not. Yeah, it was.
Well, was, made.
What a rib.
I love the whole concept of it, too, because it's something that I think we do a great job of. And we always have a lot of different stories moving, but they all have beginnings and middles and ends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the beginning of it where you kind of smash up Trent's mom's car. Mm-hmm. And at the end, she picks the guys up and they leave and she gives you guys the finger. I mean, what a great, I mean, that was got to be about a 2 month storyline or right?
Yeah. Just about. It was awesome. And shout out to Sue for doing that. I know she'll never forgive us, but she was great, man. She was a team sport. And that, I think there was no better way to end the match than with that middle finger
perfect.
Going up.
Yeah. Well, she's got her own t-shirt level now.
Yeah. And having to convince her the whole day. To because she didn't want to give us the finger.
Really?
Yeah. And we were like, that's taking the match from here to like way up there. You know what I mean? Like that's the icing in the cake.
Match. It's the, like you said, it's the exclamation point on the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It began with her in the car and it ends with her in the car. Yeah. You know, bad guys lose. Good guys win. That's kind of the basic storytelling of what wrestling is.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, it was just us feuding with Sue.
right. Trent and Chucky taking the back seat.
Yeah,
sure. When you're talking about your experiences in AEW, I mean that's got to be one of the highlights for sure. And here we are, almost a year in. How has it been overall for you guys?
You can start.
I think great. It's been a huge learning experience because I've talked about this before, but an impact we have Conan kind of like really like leading us into stuff, and here. We're kind of left to our own devices. Mm. Like with the stuff that we learned there and with you and other people to kind of help us and guide us along the way. But it's been a huge learning curve and I love it because it's been a new challenge. We've had to be more self-sufficient and come up with ideas on our own and stuff like that. And I love it. I love the work environment and the people. I think we made the best choice to come here. It's been a great year so far.
Yeah, it's been... you know, awesome work experience and stuff like that. Like I've said it plenty of times, like this year is probably one of the worst years of my life, but the fact that we still had this and something to point my, you know, however I'm feeling or whatever I'm going through, just to have that distraction or have that you know, that thing just to let loose and to let shit out and things like that. So I'm thankful that we still have this and you know, and there's times, honestly, to be real with you, Chris, there's days where you know, we come here and my mind is all over the place, you know what I mean, dealing with different things. I've always been open about, you know, my personal struggles and my mental health and stuff. So, you know, there's days where, you know, and just like anything, you or anybody, there's days where you just don't want to be around people or you don't want to deal with shit or you don't you know, and I've had plenty of those days, but I also try to remind myself that we're living our dream every single day. You know, we're in such an amazing place in our lives, in our careers, that I can't let my personal shit like hinder that. You know what I mean? So,
well, and the thing is too, like, and obviously the year started with the passing of your father. We've talked about that before. But I think that, like you said, you had an outlet, but a release, but also used some of that. Like, I still remember that promo that you did when we were doing the thing with Moxley, and then he was blind in one eye, and your father actually was blind, and you using that for this promo. It was a real kind of eye-opening moment. Like, holy shit, this guy can do a really riveting, you know, interview segment, which I thought was really good for you, too. You know, so you were able to use some of that negative energy for a positive thing.
100%. And I mean, like, it was still... you know, it was one of those surreal moments when I look back and I'm like, damn, I was sitting across from JR, you know, doing this interview. And I automatically thought back to like all the greats have sat across from JR, you know, and done interviews. And those were the moments that kind of like skyrocketed, you know, their careers and stuff like that. So it was humbling and it was surreal. And I mean... We're the type of guys, and me more than anything, that like we're always chasing that what's next, you know.
Right.
We're always chasing that what the what's next, and we always want more. We always want to do more. We always want to be better. And yeah, like
it's one of those things too, where if you're talking about, you know, working here, thanks Jeff, in AEW, and kind of we're all in charge of our own stuff. And I mean, it's amazing to me that after a year of being here, we still have good stuff. We still positioned ourselves in a great place because it was weird when we first started. No one really knew what it was going to be like. Like, I've never worked anywhere where there's... I mean, Tony's the booker, but, you know, I'm booking my stuff. You guys have some ideas for your stuff. Mm-hmm. No one had ever been on live TV. I shouldn't say no one. A lot of people on our show hadn't been on live TV before. Mm-hmm. So it was really strange. Like, how is this going to come together? Mm-hmm. And yet every week it comes together.
Yep.
It's amazing to me.
And that's a testament to, you know, not just the performers and the guys and girls performing, and but just the team that's guiding all of us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you and Dean and Jerry and a bunch of the other guys. Like, we're all so lucky to have the team of people guiding us that, like, man, we got some of the best guys in the world. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's no... If you don't take something away from any of them, like, you're f***ed up. You know what I mean? It's interesting, too.
A lot of people have talked to me lately and mentioned Jerry Lynn's name of mm-hmm. being a really great agent, producer, coach, and you mentioned him right off the bat. So he was good to work with?
Oh, yeah, he's the best. He's one of our favorite agents, actually, mm-hmm. to work with. He keeps us real. I guess it's the way his mentality goes into structuring a match. And it definitely is compatible with the way we like to wrestle. So there's a compatibility there, and it's just great. Mm-hmm. I love working with Jerry. And then he's a legend in his own right, and it's just awesome to get to pick his brain and go back. And we'll, like, when we hang out and stuff, and we'll go back. And I was just talking to him. He told me he got to wrestle Grand Naniwa and Michinoku Pro back in the day. And I love early 90s Michinoku Pro. And I was like, what? You got to wrestle him? And I found it on YouTube and I got to watch it. He was under some hood. I forgot what was his name. And it was just awesome to talk old school wrestling with him.
Negro Casas would always call him Cangrejo. Cangrejo. Which is Spanish for crab. Yeah. You see Cangrejo? He's Grand Naniwa. Cangrejo. Yeah. You feel the same, obviously, about
100%. Yeah, Jerry's the man, and he played such a huge role in putting together that street fight. And he thinks of the small nuances, the small things that not everyone thinks about. And for him, realism is key. Mm. You know, and that's the same thing with us. If the more legit something looks, the better. You know, and because we're still in the business of suspending belief, right? So,
oh, yeah, absolutely, we all are.
Yeah, so that's the biggest thing. But yeah, he's the man, and I look forward to continuing, you know, learning from him and a bunch of the other guys.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
So tell me kind of how the journey of you guys getting to AEW, and you know, obviously we'll talk about Impact as well, but you guys were really high up on the food chain there, and what led you here?
Well, we had gotten an email from Impact in early March 2017, and at first I thought it was a rib. Ortiz called me while I was making lunch for my daughter, and he's like, "Yo, I'm at work. Look at the email," because we at the time we shared an email.
Yeah, we had a booking email. We would go
there. And you know, he's like, "Yo, there's an email there. You need to go check out." And I can't right now because I'm at work. Okay, bye. And I'm like, bro, I'm like making lunch for my kid. I'm not calling anybody right now.
What do you mean you're at work? Like a day job?
Yeah. I had a shoe job still. Right, it was right before Impact.
What was it?
I was a security guard at TJ Maxx. I would catch people stealing. I was like a plain clothes security.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh man. Any high spots from that over the years?
I mean, I've got into it a couple of guys. One crazy time, a guy pulled out a knife on me, a big blade, and I was just like, "All right, keep it. It was like $50 sneakers. And I was
take
like,
a t-shirt.
Yeah, I was like, take it. Like, it's not that serious to me. I was like, I'm good.
So you got the email. And
so we got the email, and I was, it was an email from Jeremy Borash. And we were like, I remember looking at the email, and I was like, what a rib. Whoever's rib, you know, we thought it was a rib the whole time. It was like, hey, this is Jeremy Borash from Impact Wrestling. Here's my email. Here's my number. Please give me a call when, you know, as soon as possible, whatever.
And were you guys just working indies at that point in time?
Yeah, at that point, we had our shoot jobs, and we were working indies every week. And
what was your shoot job?
I was a conference coordinator for a law firm in Midtown.
Damn, so this is only 3 years ago. You guys are still 9 to 5 in it.
Yeah.
I was under the assumption you guys have been, you know, Ring of Honor and Impact for like 10 years or something along those lines. Wow,
we were on the indies for 9 years before we got called.
You got your first national chance. Mm-hmm. That's amazing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we were doing the indies, and then that happened. And
but right before, sorry to cut you off, like right before we got the call from Impact, we were really breaking out. Mm-hmm. We were starting to break out in the indies and starting to wrestle more names and getting more high-profile matches. So it kind of all came together at the right time.
Right, it's funny, because right before we got that call, maybe like 2 weeks prior, we wrestled the Dudleys and the Hardys.
Yeah.
In New York.
Like a House of Hardcore or something? Or?
It was House of Glory.
Gotcha.
With Amazing Red. And we wrestled them there. And the Hardys were still doing the Impact thing at that time.
Yep.
And 2 months later, we got that that email.
Yeah.
And then I remember, you know, I finished making lunch. I told my daughter, yo, chill out here real quick. I ran in the bathroom. I called Borash. And honestly, the conversation went so fast. It was, hey, there's opportunity. Are you guys available such and such date? And we were like, we are now, you know, like it is. Let's do it. And then I remember at that point, actually, I had already quit my 9 to 5. I had quit in September, and we got the call in March. But I remember in September when I quit the 9 to 5, I was like, this wrestling shit needs to work now. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a family. Last I have chance, an apartment. Yeah, this is, we're going to, no pun intended, we're going to go all in with this, and we're going to give it everything that we have. And hopefully something comes of it, you know. Like, we were both at the time, he didn't have his kid, I had my family, and I was like, this shit needs to work, because if not, I'm screwed.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure how old you guys are, but I'm assuming he's probably in your 30s now, or close to it at least.
I'm 29. Yeah.
I'm 34. Well, about to be 34.
So there you go. So, you know, you're not kids anymore.
Yeah.
You got to make this work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a career.
And, you know, thankfully, when I quit my job, I was like, now, like, we need to make money, you know? So we were killing ourselves on the indies. Like, it was insane. Like, 4 days a week.
Really?
You know, we were on the indies. Just
bopping all around the country?
All over, yeah.
Mostly in the New York area?
No, mainly. Northeast. Yeah, northeast, down south. We would go, we did Midwest a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it was insane. Like, it was great because I was able to pay my bills and still support the family off of wrestling, but that's our bodies were, you know. And, you know, finally we get the call back to the Impact thing. We get that call, and I remember getting off the phone with Borash, and I just hugged my daughter as tight as I could, because I was like, this could be it. This could be something, you know. And I was like, I don't have to worry, like, shit, next week we got to do groceries, you know.
You
got
a guaranteed contract.
Yeah. And so yeah, that happened. And then maybe like 30 minutes later, I got a call from 619 area code, and you could already know that one. And you know, Mr. Carlos Sylvia. No, but Conan called me. And
did you know him?
That was the first time I ever spoke with him.
Gotcha. Yeah. A phone call from him. He's like,
because he was doing LAX before.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. was
Homicide Hernandez.
Yeah. And then you guys came in as kind of like the new age.
The new age
LAX.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Conan had the idea?
Yeah.
Well, they, I think how the story goes, Jeff had hit up Conan and was like, hey, I want you to come back. So they had wanted him to come back and be a mouthpiece for someone. And he was like, nah, if I'm going to come back, I want to bring back LEX, you know, and I want Homicide with me, and I want to bring him back. But I need two new cats. You know, Conan has always been, he's always trying to find a new talent.
That's right. Yeah.
So
very much so.
Yeah. And he said he wants to be LAX. And they were like, all right, fine. Find the two guys. So through word of mouth, Shane Strickland, Swerve in NXT at the moment, he was working with Conan and Lucha Underground. And he just threw our name to him. And he was like, hey, I know two Puerto Ricans. They're a tag team. You want Latinos? Here you go. And he did some research on us. He looked up some matches on YouTube. And then really the deciding factor was Homicide. He was like, hey, do you know these cats from New York? And Homicide goes, yeah, I know them. And then he was like, what do you think? And he's like, yeah, they're the ones.
You know? Homicide, and little did he know, Homicide has been our mentor since we started.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
He's been like, you know, he was the guy that...
For all of New York, really.
Yeah.
But if you were like, he respected us because he saw like... what they did early on in their career and us.
Saw your growth.
We were doing it the right way. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We were wrestling everywhere. We were getting better. Every time he would see us, we would get better. And he kind of mentors all of New York. Like if he sees something in someone, he'll kind of nurture it and kind of put them in the right path. But yeah, and it just worked out to be what it ended up being.
How did you guys end up becoming a tag team in the first place?
Well, we both separately went separate training. We went our separate ways. We met up randomly at the show. We were maybe 3 years into our training. We were still green.
Did you know each other?
Yeah, we used to backyard wrestle with each other, actually.
Oh, so you guys teenagers. Kids. Yeah.
All right on.
But we weren't like friends back then, but we knew each other. We would hang out in the same circles, but we weren't as close as we are now. Now we're just an old, grumpy, married couple.
That's how it gets, too.
Yeah.
That's what Big Show used to say to me all the time. He's like, you're acting like... You're my wife, and we're 50 years old. Put on your glasses. Stand up straight.
Yeah, that's us.
Yeah. So you had backyard wrestled as kids, and then went to train, and then kind of drifted away.
Yes.
And then ran into each other again?
Yeah, we ran into each other. It was at a random show, and he had just came back from Puerto Rico, and he was just like, hey, I need a shoot job. Like, I just got back from Puerto Rico. I need to make some money. And we were just shooting the shit, and I was like, hey, they're hiring at my job if you want to do it. And it was sort of the same thing, a security guard type deal job at Borders Books. And yeah, and then I recommended him for the interview. He got the job. And then, as you can imagine, all we did was talk about wrestling 24/7. And we were like, yeah, let's become a tag team. Let's do this. Let's do that. And then, yeah, we just we envisioned it, and we dreamed about it every single day. And then randomly one day he trained up at the school in the Bronx, right?
Well, the icing on the cake, before any of that, the what really made, like, the deciding factor in us becoming a tag team and us having the common understanding of what it's going to take to become great and to get to where we want to get to is one day he came to me and he was like, yo, I just finished reading this book. And you should really check it out. It's awesome and whatever. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a wrestling book. I'll check it out. And he brings me the book, and it's a Lion's Tale.
No shit.
And
that's cool.
And then I read the book in like 2 days, and I remember coming to him, and I was like, this is it. This is.
So what was it about the book that inspired you?
It was the blueprint. It was the blueprint of
just the way you did it, your journey, and how you... The journeyman. You wrestled everywhere. You got really good, and you were ready to go when you were there.
Before, yeah. So our biggest thing was that before you got to, you know, WWE and you did, you know, the big stuff, you traveled the world, and you went and built your name up in every territory that you wrestled for, and that was like, that's how we need to do it. Yeah. So that, like, especially early on when in our Impact run and when we really started traveling out of the country and stuff. We're like, this is exactly how it needs to go. You know, we do the States, we get out, we'll go to Mexico, we'll do shit there. We'll go to Germany, we'll do shit there. Mm-hmm. And we just did that whole loop until AEW.
So you guys toured around together doing all of that?
Yeah.
Like,
it was super hard as a tag team, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Trying to get booked in the Indies, two guys,
that's paying hard,
flights or whatever.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of it in the beginning was a lot of driving for nothing. We would get paid nothing. If anything, we would break even at times. And that's why we had shoot jobs. I would have to pay off the credit card just to break even, just so we could do it right again, right in the weekend. But yeah, we did it together somehow, some way.
What you said earlier was great. You said that he called you, said, "I just came back from Puerto Rico. I got to make some money." As in, you think if you just come back from a tour, you're going to have your money.
No.
It was Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Money. Yeah, I had left to Puerto Rico because of, you know, some, I had to get away from the city for a little bit.
Gotcha.
So I had to disappear a little bit. And then I was dead set. I was like, I'm going to go to PR. I'm going to figure it out over there, make my life or whatever. Because I didn't see myself coming back to the city. Because I was like, for what? The same shit to keep getting into trouble to keep, you know, at the time I was 18, 19, you know, I was like, I can't keep doing this to myself. I can't keep putting my family through the same shit. So I was like, I'll chill over here. But then I don't know where I found my ass back in New York, because it
calls you back.
Yeah, man. It always calls.
So what were some of your favorite places that you went to when you traveled around the world that you mentioned?
I love England. Manchester is one of my favorite places on earth. I just have really good memories in that city. I love Germany.
Germany was Germany's the best awesome. For me. Yeah.
Would you guys go over there for an extended length of time or just for a
we
show? Went over,
we would go for a few weeks. Like we were,
We did two tours over there. We did a big tagly with WXW.
Oh, I've heard of that before.
Yeah.
Bad Bones?
Yep, yeah. Bad Bones is one of them. Yeah. We did two tours. We did one tag tournament and then we went back and we did like a little like
3 week
or 2 weeks,
two and a half weeks
where we just got in a van and we would do all these small towns in Germany. And that was,
that's
really
great.
Cool.
I didn't know you guys had that much experience overseas like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one place that we wrestled in Germany that it was like a famous, heavy metal like venue. It was called Hellraiser.
Oh, really?
It's in Leipzig, Leipzig, I think. And man, you go in there, it's a small spot, you know what I mean? But In the backstage area, just the posters and 8x10s of everyone have been there.
Yeah.
Everybody's been there. It's crazy.
We were so hungover that day.
It was so bad.
The boys took us out. We got so hammered. We stood up to 6 a.m. and we had to be on the bus at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
We got back, literally passed out for 20 minutes, got up, was still drunk.
But the best part about that day was the promoter and all the guys were like, because we were in the vans out, right?
We slept the whole day.
Yeah, and the promoter and everybody's like, how are they? We're in the main event. And they're like, how are they? These guys are cooked. they're not going out there to wrestle. They're going to give a shit before whatever. Maybe two matches before ours. They're like waking us up. Yeah. Whatever. We call the match. And main event, we shut that shit down. It was all. And then we get to the back, and the promoter is like, "I did not expect that." And I was like, "You're welcome." I'll go to sleep.
I remember we were in Sheffield. I was actually on my birthday, like November 9th. I think so. It was the 10th. The 9th was the day before, and I got same thing. Super drunk, 6 in the morning, barely make the bus, and I get to the venue, and that's the first time I ever worked with Undertaker in a single match on TV.
On TV, not on the show.
And so I found a couch kind of like this one that you guys are sitting on in an office. I turned the lights off. I set my phone alarm for like 4 o'clock and I went to sleep. I woke up and it's like, oh my gosh. Went downstairs, the old classic, just the cup of water, throw it in your face, your face. Uh-huh. And same thing, tore that shit up. I remember afterwards, Undertaker just sitting there going, no, that's what wrestling's all about. I was like, yes, fuck, I feel like shit, but I'm glad we had a good match. Part of being great, man.
Yeah,
you got to do that too.
Uh-huh.
So that, like I said, I think that's really interesting that you guys did that, because not only does it give you ring lessons and wrestling lessons, it's also really good life lessons.
Yes.
How to be away from home and how to survive, you know, in Leipzig, Germany, you know, in a van or whatever it may be.
Yep.
I think that's something that a lot of, you know, younger wrestlers should do, and a lot of them don't now, because you basically just get signed right out of wrestling school in a lot of ways. You lose a little bit of that how to get over anywhere, independence of that. You know, did you guys find that helped you when you come back to the States?
100%. Like the fact that we you know, we would go to these different countries or whatever, and people knew who we were was like humbling as shit,
or making new fans,
making new fans, and people are like, man, I've never seen you guys, but holy shit, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and then coming back to the States, it was like, yeah, so everything that we learned and everything we were putting forth over there, let's bring it here and just blow it up, you know. And it's been a wild time. It's
what
been
was wild. Your name at that point in time?
It was Santana and Ortiz. We were, well, at when we were, so we started traveling overseas during our Impact run a lot.
Okay.
Like, that's when we started doing that. But before Impact, it was Angel Ortiz and Mike Drastic.
Yeah. And Mike Drastic. Was, the real deal, Mike Drastic.
Yeah.
And we were EYFBO, and it stands for Entertaining Your Fucking Balls Off.
Yeah.
Wasn't there some other weird name that you guys had, some kind of a collective name, like Hivisu or what the hell was that? I looked something up on Wikipedia. Like,
EYFBO.
Maybe is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things when we first met. I didn't know if your name was Mark, Mike, if they're mad at him. Yeah. And he's calling you Richie. I'm like, fucking hell, man. What's this guy's name?
That's the best, because you commit a crime. Yeah. It's a wrap.
MVP is like that, too. He was on the cruise this year. We were up all night, like you said, solving the world's problems. And I was like, what the fuck is your name? I've known you for 10 years. I just call you M. Like, what is it? You know, is it Alvin? Is it, you know, Hassan? What is your name, dude? And Conan's like that, too. He's Carlos. He's Charles. He's K-Dog. He's Conan. Like, mm-hmm. Which one is it, dude? Mm-hmm. You know? Like, maybe that's the reason why.
And that's how it's been. And that's how it's been since I was a kid, too. Because as a kid, my family, they call me Anthony. Anthony's my middle name. And then... So it's Anthony, and then I go to school and work as Mark, or if I go chill in certain circles as, you know, Mike, or it's this, or it's that. So I'm
why
like,
are you calling Richie again?
The movie La Bamba. So us and our boys, we had an inside joke. We would talk about that movie all the time, especially when we'd be in those van rides. So it just, I can't put my finger on it the exact moment we decided to call him Richie, but we were just like, yeah, you're Richie Valens, man. That's what it is.
Yeah. At this point, I just take it on the chair. I just keep it going. Yeah.
Tell us about the time and Impact, because you were there for 2 years or 3 years?
2 years.
Two and a half,
yeah. 2.5.
And you guys were working all over the place. And obviously, I think Don Callis came in at that time, mm-hmm. right towards the end of it, or maybe in the middle of it, or whatever it was.
It was probably in the middle of it, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it like when there was kind of a change in of regime there?
Man, it was hectic. Mm-hmm. There was a lot going on.
It was hectic when we came in and the, you know, the very first, that first month, man,
there was a change of regard. So Jarrett was taking it back over from Dixie. So there was a lot going on. Then there was like a new regime coming in. There was, you know, the guys that were there from Dixie were kind of on their way out. They were bringing in new people to kind of run stuff. So there was just like a million things going on. And they got it together, especially towards the end when we left. Like, they got a smaller crew. They had less cooks in the kitchen, and it was a lot more things got done. But during that time, it was chaos, honestly. We had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. The day that they put the tag title on us was our second day in the company. We had no contract signed, no nothing. We didn't even know we were winning the titles. We just come up, and Scott D'Amore was the agent of the match. So we walk up, we're talking about the match, and we're just like, yeah, we're calling it. All right, cool, cool, cool. And then he's like, yeah, LAX is up, and it's for the titles. And then we just look at each other, and we're just like, okay, all right. We play it cool.
Yeah,
we're like, yeah, whatever. The meeting breaks. We walk off to the corner, and we're like, what the fuck is going on? What? You know what I mean? I have no idea what's going on.
But honestly, like, not to cut you off, but I wouldn't have had it any other way, because cool. I feel like that truly taught us, like, you're either going to sink or you're going to swim.
Yeah.
So
this is how the business really works.
Yeah, and they're putting us in this position. You're either going to make it work or you're going to shit the bed.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, at that point, we had, you know, been working some time and we had our experience, and thankfully that also we had Conan there to help guide us and stuff. But man, it was like, I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah. Because it was like fire under the ass and keep it going.
There's no time to think about it.
Exactly.
No. We were definitely set up for success there, though. We had a good team behind us, and being that we were kind of like Borash's and Conan's project, they took care of us. So obviously they put us in the best possible position to make us look good. And and it's funny, we were sitting maybe a couple of months after, you know, we already signed, we were already in the company, and Borash, we were all kind of shooting the shit, and he was like, we didn't think you guys were going to work out the way you did, but you did. And I was like, yeah, sometimes you hit it out the park, and sometimes it just
ends up. He didn't realize how ready you guys were.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you bring in people all the time that haven't done what you guys had done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because people think all the time, like I remember the first time I won like the Undisputed Championship, and my wife was like, why didn't you fly me in or tell me? It's like, I found out literally that afternoon. It's the famous story where I was at catering and Vince and Undertaker were standing there, and Vince knew I could hear him. He was like, Taker, you know, the business is going down the toilet. How? We're putting the title on Jericho. And that's all I heard. Like, is he serious? I was like, yeah, you're going over. Really? Like, I had no idea. Three hours later, I'm the Undisputed Champion. I think people think sometimes there's this big, long, you know, thing mapped out as it should be. Mm-hmm. Not sometimes necessarily the case.
Yeah.
So what kind of made you guys start thinking that it was time to get away from Impact?
So we had did the first Jericho cruise. Right, we did the first Jericho cruise.
That's right. That's the first time I met you guys.
Yeah, that was the first time that we met you, and the first time we worked with the Bucks. And you know, we had a great match with the Bucks, and we noticed our chemistry with them, and it was great overall, great experience and stuff like that.
Interpromotional, Ring of Honor and Impact.
Some
real dream matches at the time,
and it was awesome. Like me as a wrestling fan, you know, 10, 15 years ago and being on a big ass boat with all these, you know, wrestlers and amazing. But, we did that match. We had that weekend. And I think after that, we started talking. We were like, up to that point, we had maybe
8 months left,
in our contract. And we started talking. We were like, hey, you know, at that point, we were already four-time tag champs there. We had did every, like, major match that they had. We had worked all the guys there. And we've always told each other, like, the only way to get better is to continue working with good people and to just continue gaining new experiences and stuff like that. And, you know, we both agree. We were like, the first thing we said was, what else is left for us to do? What can we do? Because, again, we're always chasing that. What's next? We're always wanting to grow and wanting to get better. So we're like, what's left for us to do here? What are we going to do? How are we going to be different? And also at that point, like, we felt like the crowd was almost turning on us too, because it was like, we've been in this top position since we came in. We've done everything that the company, you know, has put us in. And we're like, what else are we going to do? You know, what? And we're like, yeah, we got to continue growing. You know, we want to get to a point where and the biggest thing was, we want to give our families a great life. You know, like we both grew up two poor kids in New York City. And, like I told my girl and I told my daughter and we told each other, we were like, we'll never be poor again. I refuse. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I will do whatever I need to do. But like, that was our biggest thing. We want to continue growing our brand, growing ourselves, and giving our families a great life. You know, you more than anybody knows, you know what I mean? Like, you've done it all. And now you and your family get to live an amazing life. And you're still rocking and rolling, you know?
Yeah. Well, because you got to take a chance, too. Like you said, when you know, the old school mentality, if you're in a territory and you start getting stagnant, well, then you leave and go to the next territory. Mm-hmm. Well, thankfully, there was a new territory for us. When did you start hearing about AEW?
Shortly after the cruise. Mm-hmm. It was a couple of months.
Yeah, it was maybe like a month after the cruise. Yeah.
That's about right, because it'd be about November of 2018. That's when
we
started getting rolling. Yeah.
And then
Cody had contacted us.
Okay.
And it was just like, hey, how long do you have left at Impact? And then
we told him, and he was like,
okay,
keep me in the loop.
And we were like, all right. So already based off that, we already knew we had another option. So when we were actually at the time, we were trying to negotiate with Impact. We were like, hey, we need a little bit more money. And they were kind of going back and forth with us, which I understand. They're running a business, so they're not going to just outright give us exactly what we want. So just honestly, with that, just going back and forth with that, And then knowing that we had other options, and also WWE was an option at the time because Boresh now works there.
Right.
That was our in. So, yeah, so we were just like, okay, what are we going to do? And then, you know, when it came up and we were maybe at like, I'd say a couple of weeks out from leaving Impact, we still didn't know. We were like really sitting there and trying to make the decision. And they were like, all right, just stay for one more year. You know what I mean? Just do one more year and whatever, and we will figure something out. And we're just like, ah. But then we were going over in our heads. It was like, what are we going to do?
Right.
We're going to just stay here and just people are going to turn on us. And then what about if we stay here and they kind of feel like we're gonna leave and maybe they bury us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or something shitty happens. And I was like, hey, we're willing to do business the right way. We'll lose on the way out. We'll put over whoever you want to put over. But yeah, we just felt like it ran its course. And we loved the people there. We loved working there. But yeah, we just felt that we needed to grow. We felt like we were big fish in a small pond. Mm-hmm. And not that we weren't being challenged, but we wanted the challenge to try to work our way up from somewhere.
Well, just
else.
Starting a company that never existed, you know, a week prior was a challenge. Like,
yeah.
It was the same
yep.
for me.
Yep.
You know, and it's kind of one of the reasons why I came here too, is knowing what I would be doing in WWE and not knowing for sure what we'd be doing in AEW, because there was no template. There was no mm-hmm. blueprint. So
it goes back to taking the chance.
Let's
like
take
you said.
A chance.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why. So you mentioned WWE. Did you have some contact with them beyond just talking with Jeremy?
Yeah, we were talking with Regal back and forth, mm-hmm. like for a few months. You know, we were going back and forth with Regal, and they had told us they were really interested in having us and all this stuff, and they had seen what we were doing at Impact and on the indies and stuff, because we were also working a lot with Progress Wrestling and WXW, which are two like sister companies now
with WWE. That's right, yeah.
And we were doing a lot of work there, and
the guys at Progress put in words for us, and they're like,
yeah,
these guys
like,
are great, like whoever they had contacts mm-hmm. from WWE, they were constantly put us over to office.
And we kept it real with Regal too. We were like, you know, this is what it is, and
well, he kind of knew. He was like,
yeah,
I know what's up.
Yeah, he knew what was yeah. up. But I also appreciated that he kept it real yeah. with us, you know. And yeah. he was like, you know, he told us straight up. He was like, no decision is a wrong decision right now for you guys. You guys are in a prime spot, and just be smart about it, you know, and whatever you feel is the best, and you do what you need to do for yeah. yourselves and your family.
He didn't make it easy.
No, but they really did it.
Well, not yeah. to mention too, you guys are New York guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I grew up in Winnipeg, but I'm a New York guy, and Winnipeg might as well be, you know, as far as being a WWF stronghold,
mm-hmm.
that's the same as New York City. I mean, mm-hmm. was it hard to turn down going to the WWE where we all grew up watching?
100%.
Of course.
It definitely was a tough decision. And it's funny because we made our final decision in Puerto Rico,
yeah,
sitting
in Puerto Rico,
yeah. it all goes back, but we were sitting in a Walgreens parking lot.
Yeah.
Are you working there? Or?
No, we, well, oh. Visit. Yeah,
yeah,
we
yeah,
did.
Yeah.
We did a show.
Yeah, we're not working at Walgreens.
No. No.
yeah. But we were champions for this company, WWL.
In Puerto Rico, yeah.
In Puerto Rico, and we were champs at the time.
Gotcha.
So we were doing the loop. I think we were losing the titles.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah
it was
yeah.
our last.
Because we already knew we were going somewhere, whatever the decision
yeah, yeah.
was. So we had to like finish up, drop the titles, and I think that was the loop we were dropping the titles. But to go to his story, when we were sitting the... We have this whole spiel. So we made the decision. We sat there. We made the decision. We drank a couple of beers that day, and we were like, all right, what are we doing? And I was like, all right, we're going to go with AEW. All right, cool. We're going with AEW. And then he has this whole spiel. He was like, we don't want to burn a bridge. We got to do it the right way. He has this whole spiel in his head.
I just, yeah, I was just like, we got to keep it real. Let's just keep it real with them. And you know
yeah.
what I mean? It is what it is, you know.
But he goes to start saying his spiel to Regal. He has him on speakerphone. And he was like, all right, blah, 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 blah. He starts and Regal just already hears it. Already off the back. And he's like, pause. Stop. Stop right there. And he was like, listen, guys, if you haven't signed anything put to pen to paper yet, then just keep me informed. Just weigh out your options. But if there's something else that you want or you need from us and we can make it work, let us know. I'm like, man, like, just say.
And then
just
want to say, you
yeah,
guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then what's funny is that, like, the conversation before that, we had told them what we wanted. Like, pretty much, hey, if we ever decided to come here, this is what we want. This is how we wanted to go. And they said yes to everything. So I was like, come on. Like, you know what
so,
I mean?
So
like,
what was the final thing then? What was it about AEW that like the AEW saying yes, 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 yes?
Like you said, taking a chance.
Yeah, wow.
Taking the chance.
Taking a chance.
The
and
schedule was a huge thing because we both have young children.
Sure.
We know like back in the old days, you didn't see your children grow up.
5 days a week on the road.
And
we wanted to be dads. We wanted to raise our kids and also still continue doing what we love to do.
Yeah. And we were thinking best case scenario. Let's say we go, we blow up. We become the best tag team. That means we're going to have the most work.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we shoot for. We're not going to go there to be stagnant and just to be, we don't want to be low card guys. We want to be at the top of the card. So let's just say best case scenario is like, we're not going to raise our children. Like our wives are going to raise our children.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that was the biggest thing. Just how we knew the schedule was going to be here. And that was a huge decision. Also to get the chance to work with you.
All right. Getting back to Santina and Ortiz. So you guys signed with AEW, and when did they tell you about the Inner Circle?
That was the once we had made the final decision, yo, this is where we're coming. Yeah. Then the guys were like, okay, this is what,
Matt,
you
Nick.
Know.
Yeah, Matt and Nick. Yeah,
Matt and Nick were like, this is what's the plan and what you guys are going to be doing. And we were like, let's
for
do
us,
it.
Circle,
you
know? Circle.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Us reading your book. Coming a tag team and then getting to work with you, we were like, I mean, well, all those factors kind of factor in for us to kind of make that
decision. And then also, you know, the fact that, you know, tag team wrestling, you know, tag team wrestling is
great point.
You know, something that we've dedicated our careers to at you know, getting here. And we were like, if we go to WWE, more than likely we'll have our tag run and they'll split us up and we'll, you know, that's just the reality.
The best track record with tag right.
Yeah, they that's the reality do. Of their system and what they do. So we were like, let's go to AEW. Let's you know, just do the whole tag thing and yeah, but mainly being able to raise our families, you know, the tag team thing and the schedule and stuff like that. We were like, yeah, hell yeah. And we you know, since the beginning and talking, you know, with the Bucks and stuff, like we believe in the vision. We believe in what AEW is doing, and we want to be a part of it, you know, like, and we say it all the time, like, no matter how long this lasts, no matter what happens, no matter, we could say that we headlined the first Dynamite. We, you know, we got to be in a group with Chris, you know, and learn from Chris.
Stadium Stampede now.
Stadium Stampede. That's right, you know, like all these first things, like, will always be a part of that history. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny, too, because I think they just put that together, like the first match on Dynamite. It was the three of us against Matt, Nick, and Kenny. But we had any storyline or anything like that. It was just kind of like, here's three bad guys, right? Like, we didn't say we're the Inner Circle at that point.
No. Not yet,
right? So I would love to see that back. You guys might remember better than I did. When we were putting together the whole concept, because Tony's like, we want you to be in a faction, and I was like, I don't like factions, and no, but you're going to lead it. Like, you're the Ric Flair of the faction. And I was like, okay, well, that's pretty cool. Because to me, whenever I think faction, I think of, like, you know, NWO, where there's 50 fucking guys, and I'm guy number 27. So then, like, well, who's going to be in it? And I remember your guys' names were mentioned right off the bat. Because at one point, briefly, there was a thought of using Penta and Phoenix. And I was like, I don't want... Not that I don't want them, they're amazing, but I didn't like the idea of me with the masked guys.
Yeah.
And then your name was brought up. Like, this is perfect. Like, two, like just street thugs and ruffians, just some badass looking dudes, right? And then, of course, we've talked about with Hager and with Sammy. But so it was one of those things, because I didn't know anything about you other than I met you on the cruise. I'd seen a couple of matches there. And then, of course, I remember, I don't know if I called Conan about you or he called me about you. We talked and said, yeah, these guys are great. Because Conan wanted to come in at first. And I'm like, well, they don't need a manager. I'm the manager. Like, they're with me now. So, you know, sorry, buddy, but not that mean. But basically, like, the vision of it was to bring you guys, and nothing against Impact, but there was a stink about Impact at that time. It's pretty much gone now because they've done such a great job in returning. But let's get them away from Impact. We don't know if we can get the copyright to LAX. Like, we don't need it. Let's do something new with it, you know? So all that stuff kind of combined to us, you know, how you doing, buddy? Let's main event the first time.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing with us. We wanted to get away. We wanted to a fresh start. You know what I mean? We have built our brand and our thing with what we were doing in the ring and traveling and all this stuff. But as far as the name, like, I felt like we needed something new, something fresh, and just a fresh start coming here and just starting all over. And
so describe Proud and Powerful. Tell us about the name and what that means to you guys. I remember at first I was like, I don't really get it. And you explained it to me. And you did explain it, which made more sense.
Yeah. So I think the first it originated from the dude that did our theme song, Bodega Bams. He has a crew called Tamboys. And it's him and pretty much all his friends from the hood and stuff. And he has this phrase, being proud and powerful. And it's with everything. Being proud of who you are and being proud makes you powerful. You know, it makes you, you know. And when I explained it to you, I was like, you know, where we come from, there's not a lot of people that have hope or that have direction or that have a dream or that have, you know. So I felt like it was important for us to be those guys that those dudes on the corner looked at and be like, yo, if they were able to get to where they got to, being from where we're from, going through the same things that we've gone through, then why the fuck are we here standing on the corner wasting our lives away? Mm-hmm. That was, for me, that was my biggest thing. Like, I was one of those dudes. At one point, I didn't have any direction.
You're never going to get out of here.
Yeah. And I felt that was part of the reason why I left to Puerto Rico. But I realized when you have passion and you have a dream, like, nothing or no one could, like, take that from you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And when you put your everything into it, it's possible. And it, you know, and it may sound cheesy and everyone says it all the time, like, but, like, we're living proof of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Same thing with you. Mm-hmm. When you were younger, you wanted to be a professional wrestler, you wanted to be a rock star. Mm-hmm. And today you're both, you know, so.
And also coming from a small prairie town in Canada with no internet, how the hell do you do that? You know what I mean? Then same with you guys in the biggest city in the world, but that's the most people in the world. I'm sure you know dozens of guys that you grew up with or that were like you at some point, mm-hmm. that are have no job, in jail, passed away, whatever it may be.
Or doing the same thing that they were doing 20 years ago.
Right.
Same exact thing.
Right. You guys always, will you always stay in New York? You always live there? You're not going to move out to the country?
Me, no. I want to move. I'm about to move soon, but he doesn't want to leave.
I don't want to leave.
He'll go to Puerto Rico.
I don't want to leave, but I'm also realizing the whole main reason why I've stood in New York for so long, not only because I'm born and raised and I love New York, but now, especially now, like, the old New York is disappearing little by little every day. Like, I moved and I live in the Bronx now because I feel like it's the only borough that still truly harnesses that old gritty New York culture. And I love that. That's what I was, what I came up with. And, but now even the Bronx, that's slowly disappearing, you know.
Gentrification.
Like, yeah, man. Like, you go down to the South Bronx now, and South Bronx was, you know, at one point was one of the grittiest neighborhoods in the city, and now they're calling it Sobro, and they're opening up coffee shops. Yep. They just they're almost done building these four freaking condo buildings in the South Bronx. Since when?
Like, Sobro.
Yeah. What the hell is that? But yeah, like, old New York is disappearing, mm-hmm. and I feel like eventually it's gonna be time to you know,
vacate.
Yeah. For me, it's more the pandemic kind of opened things up, my eyes up to anything. More up because the pandemic kind of hit and took away what makes New York special.
Yes. Yeah.
And
great point.
We were just sitting there. I'm sitting at home and I was like, I could literally live anywhere now. Mm-hmm. We don't do anything.
Right.
I go to the supermarket. I go work out and I come back home and that's it. I'm just hanging out with my family. As long as I could bring you, I can literally live anywhere. And New York's kind of going back to normal a little bit, but I think winter is going to hit hard again. For me, it's not worth the money that you pay if that's you're not going to get the amenities of New York.
Which New York is, the amenity of New York is that it's New York.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And if you don't have that and you're still having to pay New York prices, for me, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Last couple things, I wanted to touch on this. because I don't know if a lot of people really knew about him. A friend of yours passed away, hit and run, about a year ago, maybe it was. I forgot what his name was.
Matt Travis.
Talk to him, because I knew you guys were very close to him, and I don't, you know, give let people know out there what kind of a guy he was.
Yeah, so I, young kid, he passed. He was 24, I think. You know, and I was training in the Bronx for a while. I was going to a gym over there, and he had started coming through with some guys that had just randomly started training. And we hit it off because he reminded me of how I was when I was out on the block and just, you know, and he still had that mentality when he came to train. And, you know, we hit it off and we spoke a lot. We had a lot of, you know, similar likings and stuff like that. But then, I started training him. I was like one of the first guys
You trained him.
I was one of the first guys to start training him. And then I had told him, yo, you should really go to like House of Glory and get trained by Amazing Red and all these guys. And then he started doing that. But he embodied like those guys that we spoke about that had no direction, had no, you know, and he like believed in this wrestling shit. Like he was like, this is what's going to take me out the hood. This is what's going to allow me to get my mom out the hood and give her a better life. These were like, he was the embodiment of proud and powerful. Like that kid was,
Not to interrupt you, but, I remember specifically, we had a conversation not too long before he, unfortunately passed away, but he was just like, man, that's all he was focusing on was wrestling. He was like all in on it. He was just like, yeah, I'm staying positive. He's like, I don't even go hang out in my block anymore. I literally leave my house, I go straight to wrestling training, I go right back. I go to work, I go right back. And he was one of those people that would just hang out in the corner and just get into nonsense with other people. And he was just so happy and so generous. It just, I know people don't like to speak ill of the dead, but I would say this if he was still with us. He was such a humble and nice kid. And it sucked, man, that he was such a good person, like really such a good person. And he came from that shitty upbringing and found positivity out of it and it came out of it. And that day he was just watching wrestling. You know what I mean? That's what he was doing. He was at his friend's house watching wrestling and he was riding bike back home. And, you know, unfortunately it happened. Yeah.
But wow. Like you said, I wanted to at least mention his name, you know.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
God bless Matt Travis there, right?
Yeah.
Last thing, bring it back on a happy level. Of all the stuff we've done Inner Circle-wise, we kind of talked about it on the podcast, but we've had a lot of fun. We've had great matches, but there's been a lot of ridiculousness too. does anything stick out to you guys as being some of your favorite moments over the last year?
Lifting a big, huge box up and your dad coming out of was probably, for me, one of the great, and then him giving all of us Rangers jerseys is probably the greatest. That'll be with me forever. I can remember you early in the day trying to explain it to him, and he's like, so I'm just going to sit there? And you're like, yes, Dad, you're going to sit in this chair, and they're going to lift
them. It's a wrestling thing.
Yeah.
And he, it's funny because he had a bag under his chair and he couldn't get the bag out. It was stuck on the chair. So he was like, when you pulled the box off, he was trying to get the bag with the jerseys off. And he was like kind of sitting and standing at the same time. How about you, Ortiz?
There were so many. I'm trying to think.
I'll jump in as you're thinking. When you got hit with the fucking bell on Stadium Stampede, it was literally like, I don't even remember what time it was at that point, 7 a.m. or something, or 6 or 4. I couldn't stop laughing. Like, even just thinking about it, it's one of those things, just thinking about it for a couple days, I was laughing so hard. And then we did that thing the next day with the box of the Stadium Stampede shirts up by the truck.
Yeah, yeah.
What? That's a lot of shirts.
That's a lot of shirts.
Oh, man, that was great.
The first take of that, he almost blew my eardrum out.
I was like... It was the first take, I wasn't so loud, and then I overcompensated for the second.
I was like, right, whoa. In his ear,
yeah.
The other one I like too is when we got the orange juice bath. I said, why, like, when we were before, I'm like, why don't you take the bump and kind of swim around in it? And once that happened, I remember it was like, it was cold and it kind of smelled, and then you were still doing it. And then I was like, would you stop it, you idiot?
Yeah.
Like, it's good, it's done. Like, it was half the shoot. Like, stop it already.
I think your dad and also you getting the spray paint in Stadium Stampede.
Oh, yeah,
that was great. Yeah, that was a good one.
That was still one of the greatest. You got anything?
I mean, we were just talking about Stadium Stampede would probably be one of my, it was just fun just to be on that field. I mean, it was long, but it was all worth it at the end. And yeah. I think that was one of my favorite things. And I was just like, man, I wish we could just wrestle like this all the time.
Yeah,
just
right? Make movies.
That. Yeah, exactly.
The other one that I loved too was the Flim Flam. And the reason why I had that idea is that my niece was spending a lot of time at our house because she has just come out of school. And she was on the TikTok, and then my daughter's on the TikTok. I'm like, well, so you came up with the idea, Santana, of us doing something like mm-hmm. we're all talking to each other, and then that became the Bubbly Bunch for the 3 or 4 weeks we did mm-hmm. it. So for the week 2, I was like, we should do our own TikTok. And Kevin Sullivan's, yeah, but you can't call it TikTok. I'm like, well, what am I going to call it? And somehow Flim Flam came up. How many takes did it take for you guys to do that?
It took me a while. So my girlfriend was recording me, and she would like shake or something, and she was like messing up the shot, so we were getting into an argument, and I was like, come on, man. Like, but it took a couple of shots to get it, but yeah,
one of the main it took me like 4 shots, but one of them I wish I would have kept, because I'm doing like my girl's recording me, I'm doing the whole dance, and in the background you hear my daughter go, Papi, you look like an idiot.
Should have cut that in.
Yeah, yo, I should have. But she said it so loud too. And like I stopped mid dance and I was like, can I work here?
Like my daughter Sierra filmed all my stuff and she was 13. And you know, she's just a teenager who knows how to use the phone. Mm-hmm. And so come here, just one more shot. Dad, my friend is coming up. No, just give me 5 more minutes. Mm-hmm. Film it this way. Okay, one more time. Just Dad. But she did it. So you get the kids involved. Dudes, it's great working with you. And once again, congratulations on an amazing match last week. And let's do it again this week.
Hell yeah. Thanks, you, boys. Chris.
Cheers.